A defining moment for America, the rare conviction of a police officer. We're reflecting on this moment on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Judge Peter Cahill, here he is reading and confirming the verdict yesterday afternoon of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin.
We, the jury, in the above-entitled matter as to count one, unintentional second-degree murder while committing a felony, find the defendant guilty. We, the jury, in the above-entitled matter as to count two, third-degree murder perpetrating an eminently dangerous act, find the defendant guilty. Count three, second-degree manslaughter, culpable negligence, creating an unreasonable risk, find the defendant guilty.
What does this moment mean to you? It's 800-642-1234. Angela Lang is Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities, or BLOC. Angela, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me and a part of such a really important processing discussion moment in our time.
Absolutely. Tracy Dent is co-founder of the Milwaukee Coalition Against Hate. Tracy, welcome back and thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Tracy, you first. What went through your mind when you heard guilty on all three counts?
Relief. Mm. Activists across the country, even across the world, was weighing in and was watching the verdict. And it was a small step in the right direction to put other officers across the country on notice that, continuing the protesting, the advocacy for change is starting to happen and starting to make sense to many people across the country.
Small step in the right direction. Angela, we heard George Floyd's brother say when the verdict was read, he could finally exhale. And I wonder if you felt a version of that when the verdict came down.
Absolutely. That's exactly how I've been describing my feelings. The last year has been tough on our communities in so many ways and really traumatic. And it felt like we've been constantly fighting for so long now that it did feel like yesterday was an exhale. And at the same time, it's bittersweet. We didn't even get a chance to really fully process before we heard about Micaiah Bryant, who was 16, that was shot and killed by a police officer. And so I think while we're all processing, I think we're taking this deep exhale. We know that it's also still very bittersweet and that there's so many more people that deserve accountability and they deserve justice. And we need to be clear that what happened yesterday was accountability, but it wasn't justice. And this is just the first step.
Angela, as you mentioned, just before the judge read the guilty verdicts, the teenage Black girl killed in Columbus, Dante Wright killed for being pulled over for a traffic violation near Minneapolis during this trial. What will it take? What will it take to break this cycle?
That's a huge question. I think there needs to be a complete overhaul and a complete restructuring about how we think about and how we deal with safety. On a federal level, we need to pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act that covers everything from prohibiting racial profiling to collecting data to stopping sexual assaults in law enforcement custody. Locally in Milwaukee, our fire and police commission is still, for whatever reason, debating making an exception to chokeholds. This is something that we're currently going through. And so these are our policies that are before us at this very moment that we can actually choose what side of history that we are on. And so not only does it take this policy, but it takes a complete audits of individuals and understanding how people are perpetuating white supremacy culture in ways that maybe they don't realize. It means understanding the origins of policing go back to slave catching days to really fully try and comprehend how white supremacy has been so pervasive in our institutions, but in especially policing. And we need a complete overhaul of what that looks like and policy and the policies that are before us, both on the federal level and very locally, are at the forefront right now.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about yesterday's verdict in the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin with community organizers, with activists Angela Lang and Tracy Dent, and your response to the verdict. What is this moment like for you? 800-642-1234. Tracy, as Angela is saying there, this is a rare conviction of a police officer. Policy changes must happen. Why do you think the jury reached guilty verdicts in this case, but not in so many other killings at the hands of police officers?
Well, I mean, because this went globally, for one. Like the prosecutor said, they had put together an all-star team. This is a blueprint that needs to happen all across the country. And one of the things even here in Wisconsin, you know, it's crazy how there's two justice systems, one for the white and one for people of color. You know, so when a police officer kills someone of color, why does it take so long to decide if they decide to press charges against the officer? You know, but if an individual kills another individual, within days there is, you know, charges brought against that person. But when it comes to the officer, it takes weeks, sometimes even months to decide, oh, we're not going to charge the officer. We don't think we can win. You know, it shows that, you know, the either the DA or the prosecutor is looking for ways not to prosecute the officer. And that's the perception that the community has, and we do not have trust in the justice system or even in the DA or the prosecutor.
Tracy, the videotape from the eyewitnesses, the surveillance cameras, the body cam film from the officers, it showed in excruciating detail George Floyd's last moments in all of these different angles. What impact did this footage have on the trial?
It had a very impact, because what if that was your father? What was that if that was your son or your brother, your relative, your friend, and you watching this unfold on national TV? As you know, and my heart and my congratulations and thank you to the young girl who videotaped this. Mm-hmm. You know, because I know she was going through you can't really describe what she was going through, and the whole world should say thank you to her, because if it wasn't for her, I don't even think that we would even have this conviction. And it's just that when we saw this unfold, nothing but anger, just, and it's like, here we go again. And, you know, and shout outs to all the protesters all across the country, especially here in Wisconsin, that they put the boots to the ground and marched every day until they found justice.
Mm. Angela, your thoughts on this important, hugely important evidence of bystander video and other video and footage?
Yeah, it's something I've been reflecting and processing on about what it took to actually get to this moment. It felt like such a Herculean effort, you know, so many nights of protests that were a lot of times met with police violence, so many just challenges over the last year and trauma that, you know, it took so much for us to even get to this moment. And even then, we were holding our breath. We had all the evidence. We heard the arguments at the trial. We've seen the video. And even then, we didn't think that we were actually going to get an outcome like this. And so it's interesting to think about just how much it took to get here. And the fact that it took so much to even get here, I think, is reflective of what we need to continue to do. But also at the same time, we need to make sure that we don't need to move mountains, you know, for, you know, almost a year in order to see some sort of glimmer of hope. Every case, you know, needs to be met almost with the same level of resistance to see any level of movement. And that's just unacceptable, that that's what it takes in order for us to get to this moment. So it's something that I'm processing. And I agree with Tracy, you know, the young woman that pulled out her phone and recorded, and, you know, she's a big reason of why we are here today, in addition to the protesting, to the addition to the advocacy and policy conversations that are happening. So many people had so many different roles to play, and in doing so are all kind of taking on additional trauma in order to do so. And that's not sustainable for what we need every time something like this happens.
Angela Lang, she leads BLOC, which stands for Black Leaders Organizing Communities. Tracy Dent is here, co-founder of the Milwaukee Coalition Against Hate. Did you participate in protests or demonstrations after the killing of George Floyd? How do you feel now? What response do you want out of elected leaders in Wisconsin? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're reflecting on this moment. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin convicted of murder in the death of George Floyd. We're taking this hour to reflect, to listen on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Have you been protesting against police brutality as part of the Black Lives Matter movement? What do you think needs to happen next in the movement to affect change? What is the relationship like with police in your community? Is it strained? Be part of this, 800-642-1234. We have Tracy Dent here, who is an activist and co-founder of the Milwaukee Coalition Against Hate. Angela Lang is executive director of BLOC, that stands for Black Leaders Organizing Communities, and they stay with us. Let's bring in Doug now in Lansing, Iowa. Hi, Doug. What are you thinking?
Well, I agree with the verdict, and I'm sort of relieved that it did happen. One of my concerns is I worked in law enforcement. I'm retired now for many years in small communities. And maybe it's naive, but I remember that the police officers used to wander up and down the streets talking to people. And most people knew who their police officers were. And nowadays, it seems that the police officers run around in cars and just answer complaints. And my second concern is a way to fix this is it used to be that police officers had to live in the towns that they worked in. And nowadays, most of the police officers do not do that. They live in different towns. So whatever they do to affect the law enforcement in the communities that they work in has no effect on themselves or their families in the towns that they live in. So basically, we need to have the police officers get back to knowing their communities, knowing what the results of what they do in their communities have an effect. And they need to know the people and get to talk to them. Like it's naive, the old Norman Rockwell pictures of the police officer giving, I believe he was giving an ice cream to a child. I think we need to get back to that. Thank you.
Doug, thank you. Tracy, the relationships in communities with that officers have in communities, has that been lost?
Yes. The distrust of the police officers, especially here in Wisconsin or even in Milwaukee. Milwaukee was ranked in the top five for years for police misconduct. And the city of Milwaukee is dishing out millions of dollars almost every year to citizens because of police misconduct. So, you know, there is a big gap between when it comes to community and police relations, you know, and it's going to take what Doug just said, it's going to take that and more police reform and community leaders and police officials to come together and work together on policies. You know, they have to work together. We don't trust, the community does not trust the police to come up with their own policies and then present it to us. I think that it needs to be hand in hand, just like if they want to mend the relationships between the community and the police.
Angela, what are your thoughts there? What is the erosion of trust like at the community level?
Yeah, you know, on one hand, I agree with Tracy that that trust is gone. On the other hand, I want to respectfully push back. And I think there's a lot of folks that have no interest in working with police officers, working with the people that are perpetuating these murders. I think it's people have actually compared this relationship to an abuser of what that looks like, and working, you know, with your abuser doesn't always lead to yield the results that you actually need. And trust has been lost so much, and white supremacy has been so pervasive that we keep thinking about reforming a system, as I mentioned, that is rooted in slave catching. And I don't understand why we want to reform a system like that, why that's okay, and why we can't dream of a different world and dream of a world without police and really think about a world that is possible where all of us can feel safe and to thrive. And we're investing in our communities. We're investing in things like mental health. We're investing in public housing and transportation and everyone's needs being met. And if there are incidences or there's mental health challenges and crises, people aren't met with lethal force at all. And so I think there's ways to come up with alternatives to policing without working with the same people that have been murdering us.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about yesterday's verdict in the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. And Angela Lang is here, Tracy Dent there with us for a few more minutes. Troy is joining us from Muskego. Troy, what are your thoughts today?
I'm Caucasian. I live, you know, pretty much out Waukesha County. And I just want to say that, you know, I'm a big supporter of Black Lives Matter. And just wearing masks, a Black Lives Matter mask, putting stickers on my cars, you know, I got a lot of responses that were not good from people that, you know, especially during the Trump era. And I just want to say that, you know, I'm so appreciative of the Black Lives Matter movement, because I had a neighbor and he was really racist. And, you know, we all got relatives and people. And it was like, if it wasn't for the Black Lives Matter movement, people wouldn't have stood on the toes of these people and had conversations every time there was a injustice towards a Black person. And then all of a sudden, this happened, and it was like, because of that movement, you know, people like to say, well, what's protesting going to do? Well, because of that Black Lives Matter movement and because of the protesting, when a situation like this comes up, you know, everybody was on the toes of their neighbors saying, okay, how about this one? This was, you know, this guy clearly was murdered. And all of a sudden you had people saying, yeah, you're right. And I think that's the difference. It was because of the movement that was going on is why this guy was charged. And I also want to say, in response to the flow of the conversation with the policing, you know, my son wants to be a police officer. And I told, you know, and everyone's saying, well, who wants to be a police officer now? And I say, you know what? Now is the time when we need good police officers. Now, if you want to be a police officer, this is a generation we want to encourage to be police officers, because this is what we need. We need good police officers. That's all. Sorry.
Troy, no apologies there. Tracy, your thoughts on what Troy had to say?
Yeah. I mean, it was because of the movement. But because of the movement, change is happening, slowly but surely. But just because we have one conviction does not mean that we can relax. I think that now the activists across the country need to push even harder, even further, to make sure change happens. Yes, and you're right. We do need more good police officers and weed out all the bad racist police officers. And also what Doug said earlier about having officers know your community, you know, walk in your community, talk in your community, talk to the people. You know, that's another way for trust to happen, slowly but surely. But at the same time, here in Milwaukee versus any other city in the country, we have to be mindful of saying that we should do, work without policing. Yes, we do need mental health funding and other social programs funding. We definitely do need that, and that's no question. And if we need to take it from the budget of the Milwaukee of the police department, let's do that. But at the same time, we do need police, because Milwaukee is, you know, we just left 2020, which was the worst year ever here in Milwaukee, and even in Milwaukee County, when it comes to violence. My brother is blind, and he is terrified to come outside because of what's going on in the streets. You know, that's, and he feels more comfortable knowing that we have police patrolling the streets, you know, and we have to be mindful of people like them. People have physical challenges that they are terrified of, you know, young people, you know, swerving and reckless driving, for perfect example. You know, we have to think about our elderly, you know, when they're on the road, and we have to worry about, you know, carjacking and stuff like that, stray bullets.
And the list goes on. Tracy, Angela, thank you for joining us. Tracy Dent is an activist, co-founder of the Milwaukee Coalition Against Hate. Angela Lang is executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. Coming up, we continue our discussion of the conviction with Representative Sheila Stubbs of Madison, co-chair of the Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities, after this news update on the Ideas Network. It is a defining moment in our collective reckoning with issues of race and justice. So what is the next chapter for policing and dismantling racism in America, in Wisconsin? We're reflecting on this moment with your reaction to the Chauvin conviction on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Attorney General Josh Call said in a statement, this verdict doesn't mean we don't need to reform our criminal justice system, but the verdict, he says, does mean there will be accountability. What does accountability look like to you? 800-642-1234. Sheila Stubbs is a Democratic state representative from Madison. She co-chairs the Speaker's Task Force to Address Racial Disparities and chairs the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus. Representative Stubbs, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. God bless you. Thank you so much for this invitation.
Yes. What emotions are you feeling? So many emotions reverberating. How much significance is this this moment from this verdict?
Thank you so much for asking me that question. Yesterday, I concluded the work on the task force, the Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities Subcommittee on Law Enforcement Policy and Standards. I knew that the jurors were working to come forward with a verdict. And so we concluded our work about 2:00. I left the Capitol. I got in my car and I learned within an hour or so that the decision, the verdict would be made. I was in the car with my mother, my daughter, who's 10 years old, and my two nieces, one that's 13 and one that's 5. And I broke down crying. It was a moment of sobbing. It was a moment of relief. It was a moment of finally, we are beginning to see some justice and knowing that law enforcement is not above the law and accountability. And it was a moment of breathing. It's been such a heavy conversation and watching family after family. I don't know if you remember back in November with the Speaker's Task Force, mm-hmm. I invited victims from across the state of Wisconsin, African-American families, Latino families, white families, Native American families, families that have been impacted by law enforcement that have lost a loved one from police brutality. And I thought about each of them and what that meant for them, because with their loved ones, some of them didn't get the justice that the Floyd family did. But across the globe, people were relieved. There were crying. It was sobbing. It was emotions. I had multiple emotions, and it reminded me of the importance of the work that I am doing. And, you know, okay, before I accepted the position as the co-chair of the task force, I prayed about it because I knew it'd be a risk. No matter what you do, people say it's not enough. You didn't go far enough. Even with the decision with Mr. Floyd's case, we still have a long way to go. We still have a long way to go. But at least it's a moment that the protesters from across the globe can say, finally, the Floyd family can feel like they have some justice. They'll never get George Black. But they will at least have a moment to say justice has at least began to be served.
Representative Stubbs, you know, I'm thinking about, as you say, justice will be served. Paraphrasing here, Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, who says, you know, justice implies true restoration, but it is accountability which is the first step toward justice. What does accountability mean to you at this point?
Accountability to me means someone being held responsible for their behavior and not allowing the law to be an opportunity to hide behind it, not finding different policies or strategies or trainings to be an opportunity for you to say, I was trained that way, I was taught that way. You can no longer hide behind the law. But for once, you will come before jurors and you will be held responsible for your behaviors. And I think it was critical that given all of the witnesses, to have the chief come before him and say, we did not train you that way, to his own officer, to me, meant a moment of relief, because we've got to get to the point where community and law enforcement can begin to heal, all of us, and begin to trust one another. But to have your own chief come before you and say, absolutely no. To me, as a woman, as an African-American, as a mother, as a legislator, told me the chief would not hide behind an officer if he's done wrong. And it meant a lot, I think, to many people to hear his chief say that.
You know, one civil rights attorney said the system worked because the people put in the work. What did the demonstrations, the protests, the Black Lives Matter movement do for justice and the future of policing?
Absolutely. Civil rights was upheld on yesterday. All the years of my life when I watched my ancestors go out and speak against an injustice. And I think the Black Lives Movement wasn't just about Black people. It was a movement for all people. And we all watched on TV for 9 minutes or so an officer kill a Black man. He murdered George Floyd right before our eyes. And thank God for the young lady at 17 years old who captured that moment. But it allowed anyone who felt like my voice needed to be heard. We will not stand by and allow you to murder on TV. And it was a moment where I've been to many of the protests and I've even participated, but you hear the demand of those that are protesting. You know, the chants were simple. No justice, no peace. Mm-hmm. Enough is enough. But not only that, protesters reminded us of how many people, how many Black and brown people had been killed at the hands of law enforcement, and they kept their names alive. And I think it was a place where anyone can come in and just join in here and understand it. It was their way of releasing, because it's so much that builds up in you, and you're able to cry. You don't look to see what the person looks like next to you, but you're crying. You are one accord. You're walking together. You're standing up. And the Black Lives Movement stood up to an injustice within law enforcement that was so unacceptable on so many cases. And we said, enough is enough.
We are talking about yesterday's verdict in the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, and we have State Representative Sheila Stubbs of Madison. With your takeaways, what you are thinking and doing in this moment, 800-642-1234. Jim is joining us from River Falls. Jim, what's on your mind?
Thank you so much. I had a couple points to make. I protested with some students that organized from Stillwater High School in Stillwater, Minnesota last week. And I was very proud that, you know, the younger generation is fighting for justice. And one of them also said, you know, what to maintain this and to go forward, that they need to make sure students go out there and vote as soon as they can. We need to, you know, make sure that the voting laws are not suppressed in this country, that voters, that there's voter suppression. And, you know, in order to overhaul the criminal justice system, right now, you know, most of the judges that were appointed over the last 4 years are very conservative. We need to have judges that represent the diversity of the people of the United States, too, people of color, minorities, women. We need to have judges that were public defenders, not just prosecutors and big attorneys and big law firms. And as it stands now, too, senators can, you know, for federal courts, can issue blue slips, which basically is a veto. It's kind of behind the scenes veto of any judge that is appointed in their district, which, you know, that should be brought out into the open, too, because that was a segregationist rule that was brought into effect by a very racist senator back a long time ago. So I think to maintain and move forward on this, we really need people to be involved with voting and overhaul the federal judiciary.
Jim, thanks. Representative Stubbs, your reaction.
First of all, thank you so much, Jim, for your comments. I agree with you. The younger generation has just risen up, and they are taking justice into their own hands and demanding that lawmakers listen. And I can say firsthand, being one of the co-chairs of the Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities, it was critical that community come into the state capitol and sit at the table with myself and Representative Steinecke and help craft the next reforms that move us one step closer to the law across the state of Wisconsin. I also agree that we have to change some of the seats in the room. We have to demand that people be our voices. And if they don't speak your voices and they don't speak your beliefs, then you should do something about changing who's representing you as an individual. I think our criminal justice system needs an overhaul. There's a systemic racism, so we have to look at practices and trainings and perceptions and historical components. And I do believe in democracy, and voting is the one piece of democracy that we cannot lose. Voter suppression is alive, and it's living and breathing. We saw it in Georgia. We've seen the voter ID coming in the state of Wisconsin. We've got to stand up, and everyone needs to vote and make our vote be accountable. Thank you so much, Jim.
You are co-chair of the Assembly Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities and Policing Policies, and I know you're going to have a forthcoming report, but can you give us any insights over the past months since September and your task force formed, what those milestones have been, what your reflections have been?
Yes, thank you, Kate. I just want to be honest with you and all of your listeners. I took a big risk. I'm new in the Capitol, 2018, freshman who arrived in the Capitol, but I didn't take a risk on my community. I know what my community needed. And the moment that I was elected, I said it loud and clear. I will work with anyone to move forward good common sense policy in the state of Wisconsin, which meant I would work with my Republican colleagues. I was very critical of my Republican colleagues not coming to the Capitol, not doing the work, not taking the 9 common sense bills that Governor Evers and the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus, some of our members, put forward. But at the same time, the reality hit me in a moment of if you want to move something forward, then you need to work bipartisan, because Governor Evers requested a special session. And you all, I know that the Republicans gaveled in, and that was it. And so when I was asked to do the position, I had to think about it, I had to pray about it. But one of the disclaimers was bring a community along with me, bring in protesters from the community into the state capitol and sitting down with policymakers and writing policy. I think that's a huge step, bringing people from outside of that building into the building, but having faith-based members, having experts, having law enforcement, having the voices of community in that space was so important. And I will say this, I do not regret one moment that I spent with community. We've cried together, we've shared our personal stories, but at the end of the day, I think people across the state of Wisconsin will respond well to the recommendations that the law enforcement and standard policy subcommittee have put forward to give to Speaker Voss.
We're talking with State Representative Sheila Stubbs of Madison, reflecting on her work on what justice looks like in the aftermath of the Derek Chauvin conviction. What does building trust in the criminal justice system mean to you? How do you feel about policing in your community? And what does this conviction mean? What actions do you want from elected leaders? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Representative Stubbs here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We are reflecting on the Derek Chauvin verdict this hour. What is the path forward to find real solutions to the huge systemic issues of policing, of racism in America, here in Wisconsin? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Sheila Stubbs represents District 77 in the State Assembly. She co-chairs the Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities, and she's with us for about 9 more minutes. Michael is joining us from Bear Valley with reflections. Michael, hi.
Hi. Just an observation and maybe a question. I'm kind of a big fan of British broadcasting crime dramas, and I noticed that guns are very rarely used to solve cases. And in this country, it's all about guns. And one of the things I noticed about Mr. Chauvin was his lack of empathy and sympathy for the human being that he had under his knee. And, you know, perhaps he was burned out, perhaps he was racist, but there was just sort of a blank robotic kind of characteristic. And I'm wondering why police networks do not incorporate psychologists as a very important tool in their practices. Thank you.
Michael, thanks. Representative Stubbs.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I think that's a reality. I mean, it was apparent that at no point was Chauvin just releasing Mr. Floyd at no given time. And let's be clear, Mr. Floyd should be alive. I truly believe that we need to make sure that psychological assessments are randomly given to these officers. It is really important that if they need to see a psychiatrist, they need to be able to see a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a therapist. I truly believe it should not be used against them if they're asking for help. I don't think that we as society should condemn them for that. I think first and foremost that, you know, when a person is asking for help, we need to make sure the resources are there. Then it's been a conversation with them, the task force, and listening to some of the chiefs and sheriff deputies and sheriffs in the space. And yes, if their person needs help, absolutely, we want to give them help. But the other part of that is they should not be on the streets with, you know, their weapons. Things should, you know, it shouldn't be that it's punishable, but we don't want them to injure themselves. We know it's a very high-stress job. They're dealing with so much at any given time. And PTSD is reality. I know there's a bill going through, you know, the legislature right now to actually give benefits to officers, to firefighters with PTSD. I know that it passed the assembly side. I don't know where it is on the Senate side, but that bill is really important to capture. So if they need those services, PTSD, while they're on the job, they should be permitted to have that as a benefit.
Representative, as we talk about legislation, we're hearing momentum at the federal level for the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, the bill that cleared the House last summer. It died in the Senate. There's been talk that it will be reignited. But, you know, states might take up the legislation themselves. What do you make of this bill, and should Wisconsin act on the legislation?
Absolutely. I think at the federal level, it's the exact level of government that this important piece of legislation, not only for our country, but for the Floyd family. And I think having President Biden and Vice President Harris be at the helm of making sure that it's passed federally is important. And then states automatically get a chance to have some of those provisions, because every state has their own you know, governor, their own legislatures. Sometimes it's divided government, but at the federal level, it's the exact level. And I truly believe that provisions from the George Floyd Act should follow at every state level. We've had some conversations about it, but I'm looking forward to watching the federal level really move this legislation and having the family go to D.C. and stand next to the president of the United States when he signs the George Floyd bill into law. That is a moment that family needs. That is a part of the healing process. And then every state will follow suit. So it is necessary. It is necessary. And I am very supportive of that legislation.
We're talking with Representative Sheila Stubbs, who co-chairs the Speaker's Task Force to Address Racial Disparities. Joshua is joining us from Watertown. Hi, Joshua.
Hi, Kate. Can you hear me okay?
We can. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call. So I have two questions. The first question is, do you think that it is a responsibility for our educational system to teach our young kids at a young age our Constitution and to teach our citizens about their rights? And the second part is, do you think that that's happening right now in our educational system? I both of my kids are in school right now, and they're learning about, you know, sex education, and they're learning about history, even though history is a precursor for the future. You know, I asked them, do you know your constitutional rights? And they're like, Dad, what is that? So my question is, those two parts are my question, and I don't think that the educational system is teaching people that they have a right to remain silent, that they're not teaching that that there is a freedom of press, that there is a freedom to do these things that a lot of people, they give up their rights right away because why? We don't know them.
Representative?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you so much for that. That comment. I don't know all the specifics of DPI curriculum, but what I can say to you, when I, you know, graduated from my school, high school back in 1989, civics was really important. And I think you are right on about where we should be. Civics and government should be 101, even at the Capitol. I don't think our constituents really understand the process within the capital government, how that works. The other factor is there are many social civil rights organizations that teach people their rights. So ACLU, NAACP are some of the groups. I know Black Lives Matter, other groups that are there, sororities, fraternities, churches, all know that there's a right, even at, you know, I'm a part of Dane County, but even in our Office of Equity and Inclusion, and the Equal Opportunities Office, we also underwent a process to teach people their rights, like know your rights. There's also been other organizations within the community that have worked specifically with law enforcement to have those little cards that you fold it front back to teach you your rights. So you're absolutely right and spot on that.
The resources are out there. Representative Stubbs, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate. God bless you, and let's keep moving forward in our state.
Sheila Stubbs, a Democrat representing District 77 in the Assembly, and she is with us on the Ideas Network.